Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, Phil Collins. No, not the rock star, the poker player. One of the November 9 this year for the World Series of Poker main event. One of the guys who will be playing for $8.7 million, the top prize, when they regroup in Las Vegas on November 5th. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's, sitting at the feature table of the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis. My partner, Dennis Phillips, who was featured this weekend in a nice piece by Howard Stutz in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, is in that town in the heart of Nevada. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. Actually, you're not in Nevada. You're on vacation, aren't you?
I am. I'm up in Colorado. I'm in Aspen right now.
Wow.
So took a few days off. I had to go to a wedding in Denver, and I'm just kind of meandering my way back to Las Vegas. By way of, you know, Aspen or whatever.
I bet it's a little bit cooler than it is the 100-degree temperatures we've been suffering through here in St. Louis.
You can deduct about 30 degrees really easy. Not a problem.
Wow. Wow. All right, we have a lot of stuff to get to today. Phil Collins will be with us, one of the November Niners. We got a lot of stuff to do about the World Series of Poker. We also are going to give away a seat to Vanessa Russo's next Big Slick Boot Camp, which will be at the Gold Strike in Tunica next week. We'll do that later. But first, Dennis, we have some breaking news about a couple of online sites. First of all, Bodog, which had kept its U.S.-facing website open, announced today that it will cease operations in the United States on December 31st of this year. They will continue in Europe and in Asia, and just got their U.K. license, but they are going to cease operations here in the U.S. And at the same time, the people from Full Tilt were at a meeting with the Alderney Gaming Council. That is the commission that oversees their online license, which was withdrawn by the AGC a few weeks ago. They met with them today in London in what I guess is the next step in trying to get back online and perhaps turn it back into a money-making operation. The word from there was that the AGC told Full Tilt that they would be fined $250,000, which Full Tilt said they had, but that they would only pay if they knew that they were 100% going to get their license back. Things went back and forth at that meeting today, and in the end, everything was adjourned and postponed until September 15th so that Full Tilt can, quote, pursue commercial interests, which I guess means look for those European investors or buyers to pour more money into the company. Now, you made a sound of grief and frustration there. What's that about?
Well, it's the response I think every player that has money on Full Tilt is going to be doing. That means now we're not going to hear anything until at least September 15th. It's another 45 days before there'll be any resolution to this, minimum. You know, it's just, it is news. It is progression. It shows they are trying to do something. I know the guys over there desperately want to, but not coming to any kind of resolution today, not getting their license back or finding out exactly where they're at. Yeah, this is, I guess we'll see what, not much we can do about it. It's just extremely irritating.
Well, the thing that's extra irritating here is this is not just about American players who've been shut out since April 15th, Black Friday, but the European and Asian players who also have been shut out of Full Tilt and can't get their money back either. Now they are going to have to wait until the middle of September before they hear anything. So that's really where the frustration comes for anybody who's got any amount of money in any Full Tilt account. And that's really all we have on that story here. I just wanted to mention it up top because it is some breaking news. Now let's talk.
I'm glad you mentioned it, but it's basically nothing. It just means, well, we've met, we've tried to resolve it, we haven't. We'll try again on September 15th. And
right.
That's no progress at all, basically.
All right, now let's talk about some of the fallout from the main event. As I mentioned, they're on their 107-day layoff now, 7 days into it. They'll play again on September 5th and September 7th. Coverage of the World Series of Poker on ESPN will begin tonight, 7 to 9 every Tuesday night for the next 16 weeks, beginning tonight with the grudge matches, Phil Hellmuth versus Johnny Chan, and Chris Moneymaker versus Sammy Farha. Dennis and I have gone in depth about having watched Johnny and Phil play that grudge match, and if you watch it tonight, I think you'll see what we were making fun of Phil for. But you'll get to judge it for yourself in the heavily edited show that will air tonight. But while we're talking about TV coverage of this, Dennis, I'm curious about your thoughts of the, quote, almost live, unquote, coverage that ESPN2 was showing, with even a couple of hours last Tuesday of the guys playing down to the November 9 showing on the main ESPN channel in addition to the online. What did you think of that?
Well, I think there was a lot of interest. I think a lot of people followed it. I think it's something that's probably going to be here to stay. I'm not sure that the players enjoyed it very much. I know it disrupted the game a couple of times and people refused to show hold cards. It will eventually, I think, come to be accepted. I'm not for sure I really enjoy it either and all for it. But the players seem to be grudgingly saying that it's the wave of the future. Got to do what it's going to do to garnish TV audiences. And the TV audience wants to see what's going on right now. So my opinion, it's here to stay probably.
Yeah, you had mentioned that you weren't 100% sure that it was a good idea for the players. You'd mentioned that several times over the course of the summer and even on last week's show. We'll ask Phil Collins, who was actually in there playing at that feature table with the lights and the pressure of the live TV. We'll ask him what he thought about that. But your concern really isn't so much the pressure of it, but the exposure of the hole cards, right?
Absolutely. The idea that somebody can see what you and how you played 30 minutes later just really is a little scary. I guess it's just going to be another aspect of the game, another thing where the skill is going to come in, that where you're going to have to do your due diligence. And if you can have somebody following it and somebody can find out whether he did or didn't bluff you, what kind of a hand he had, somebody else that's been following it, to analyze it, you know, it's another card in your deck to play.
Yep.
So whether it's good or bad, I think is irrelevant right now. I think it's probably going to be here to stay because the people following it seem to like it.
I would be pretty sure that almost all, if not all, of the guys who were playing those last few tables, once they knew they were going to be televised from days 3 through 8, they had to have somebody who was watching who could give them any kind of information by cell phone or, you know, leaving them voicemails or probably via text. And if it didn't happen this year, anybody who's going to go play in it next year, should they do it again, will certainly be prepared for that. You learn something new as the technology advances each year at the WSOP, and I agree with you that this could be a real game changer.
I absolutely think so. Now then, whenever you hit the money at the WSOP, immediately all electronic devices are prohibited. So you can't even sit there and listen to your headphones or anything like that. But there's nothing to stop you from getting up from the table, walking 5 feet away from it, and checking your text, or talking to somebody on the rail, or whatever, however you want to communicate. It will come into play, and I guarantee it will affect somebody's hand at some time and be tweeted and written about and the whole bit.
Yeah, well, we saw players getting up from the table and walking away and checking text messages. Even if you took their cell phones away, there's nothing to stop them from going over to the people there in the Thunderdome who were sitting there as fans or supporters and have them give you information. Oh, you know that hand you played against so-and-so earlier? He had ace-queen offsuit there. Or, you know, it was a total bluff, and maybe you didn't see this. But somebody at home was studying and watching it. We're talking about so much money here. And so much information. Poker is, after all, a game of information. Anything you can learn about how your opponent plays, what he or she does in certain circumstances, and also live tells that you might be able to pick up. I mean, if I were in that situation, not that I ever will be, but the situation like you were 3 years ago or like these people are today, if I could have somebody at home watching and saying, you know, I saw this guy, the way he tilted his head when he did this, or the way he bet it with his chips when he did that, or the way he leaned, or whatever it was, I would love to have that information, even if it's on a half-hour delay.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be another. Well, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. There are such a huge number of quality players now. The difference between these nine players is not that great. Now, there used to be a huge difference in players. You'd always have some weak people there. But there's just a ton of people now that really know how to play this game. And there's so many little aspects of it you have to sharpen up. And that is those tells. That is the batting pattern. That it's everything that way. And if you can garnish more information in any way, and you described a couple of them there, it's just going to make a difference. And somebody will pick up on it, or several somebodies will pick up on it. And I'm telling you, it's going to play a heavy hand in a hand here sometime in the future.
I want to say one other thing about the TV coverage, and that was last week I gave a lot of kudos to Olivier Bousquet and Antonio Esfandiari, who were two of the pros who were doing analysis there and really doing great in-depth multi-level analysis. I mean, maybe the casual poker fan who just happens to tune into ESPN didn't understand what they were doing, but if you are a real poker player and you could listen to what they were saying, they were doing great analysis not only of how they played, but Antonio in particular was talking about live tells. There was one hand with Matt Giannetti and Ben Lamb where Ben put a bet in on the river when the board put out a flush card that also paired the board with deuces. And Ben Lamb put out a bet, and Giannetti went into the tank for 10 minutes. And I want to talk about the 10 minutes in a second. But as Antonio was talking about it with Lon McCarron, he pointed out that even on the camera, he could see the carotid artery in Ben Lamb's neck pulsing really, really, really hard. And he said, I can see from here how hard he's breathing. And if I can see that, I am sure that Matt Giannetti can see it from where he's sitting. Now the problem, of course, is you got to figure out what that means, because just the fact that his carotid artery is going, which is something I never watched for, by the way, until Dennis told me about that sort of thing to look for, but the fact that it's pulsating doesn't always mean the same thing on every player. But still, wasn't that great that you had somebody on TV pointing that out to the rest of the poker viewing community?
They did a great job, and I agree with that 100%. They were actually analyzing potential hands. What kind of a hand would he make this bet with? What kind of a hand would you have to call this? You know, is this a good situation to put a bluff or not, and why? They were getting very, very in-depth in some of their analysis, and I thought they did a great job of it because they were putting their reputation on the line a little bit. These guys are coming out and flat-out saying he needs an overpair to be able to do this and, you know, stuff like that. And they were right a large percentage of the time. I was very impressed by some of their actions, some of their comments.
There was one point where Lon McCarron said, folks, Antonio cannot see the cards until you see them. He's just that good.
Yeah, that's 100% right, and Lon is 100% correct on it. I love it.
Now, let me go back to that Ben Lamb, Matt Giannetti hand, where, as I said, Matt Giannetti tanked for 10 minutes before making the call with top two, and it turned out that Ben Lamb had sucked out with a deuce on the river. He had deuce three, and so he made trip deuces and beat Giannetti. It was a tough decision for Giannetti to make, but 10 minutes is forever in poker, and I think way too long. Don't we need to do something about that, Dennis?
There's been a lot of talk about it for the last several years. We had Eric Seidel on. He played down the Aussie Millions at the high roller there where they had a 45-second clock that was in play the whole time. And he said he had absolutely no problem with it. There'd be one or two times where it might take you that long, but 90% of the time you could easily do it. I've had a couple of times where I've tanked. You know, what you're trying to do there, what a good player is trying to do, is exactly some of those things you described. You're trying to get that other player to tell you what you need to do. You're trying to see if he, what his reaction is, if he's, his heartbeat's going bad, if you're trying to remember the plays that he had done before, maybe an hour, 2 hours beforehand, did he have the same reaction? You know, it's a lot of thinking, a lot of it, but if you put that time clock on there and it's just there for everybody, then, you know, there's no disproportionate amount of favoritism or anything. And I think a 45-second to a minute time clock should be sufficient. You need to be able to make your decision by then and move on. 10 minutes is really ridiculous.
Now, I did hear somebody say, you know, any player at that table could have called the clock on Giannetti anytime they wanted to. But in a high-pressure situation like that, do you want to be the guy who calls the clock?
Yeah. I mean, can you? Absolutely. It's definitely your right, and you can do it. And I would never call the clock on a person in that situation. I mean, it would have to be such an extreme, unless I was one of the two players. You know, obviously, there may be a reason if you're the player, the other one involved in the hand, that you would call the clock if you think it will influence him one way or the other in your favor. But if you're not involved in the hand, to call the clock, oh, my gosh. For a guy's tournament life, possibly, yeah, that's just... I suppose there might be a situation where I would do it, but I guarantee it would have to be an extreme situation.
All right, now let's talk about one of the other things that has changed since you were part of that first group of November Niners 3 years ago, and that is the simple value of making the November 9. Since Black Friday, sponsorships have evaporated. You didn't see any players wearing Poker Stars or Full Tilt or Ultimate Bet patches. I read one story that said that sponsorship dollars are off 90% over the course of the entire WSOP, and Caesars had in place a no-hat logos rule this year. So when you got there, it was a huge deal, and you helped to set the standard for what being a November Niner was in 2008. Do you think it's completely devalued now? Obviously, it's a big payday, but the rest of it is not going to be there.
It's not totally devalued, no. There's still huge prestige, a huge reason to make that November 9, other than just the prize money there. The name recognition, the branding, the ability, it opens a ton of doors. Would it be better, and will it be better when this Black Friday thing disappears? Yes. Again, I don't know exactly what the figures would have been. A lot of the feature tables in the last couple of years, just by you being on a feature table and agreeing to wear a patch, was a $5,000 to $10,000 bonus for you. Many people got their buy-in back just by being the luck of the draw and happened to be moved to a feature table. It was, I thought, great for poker, frankly. And it was great for those November 9. And those opportunities are not there this year. But there's still a huge value to make the final 9. Huge value.
Well, the value for this year has already been paid out, $782,000 for ninth place. Everybody who finishes above ninth place will become an instant millionaire. Three of those guys are American. You also have a guy from Ireland, the Czech Republic, the UK, the Ukraine, Germany, and Belize. I believe this is the first time I've ever heard of anybody from Belize even in the main event. But one thing that you proved 3 years ago was when Peter Eastgate, who's a Dane, finished first, and Ivan Demidov, Russian, finished second. There's value in just being the top-ranked American, isn't there?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's still more poker played in the U.S. and more chances for sponsorship in that in the U.S. than anywhere else. To be the top American is a huge deal. It really is. And there's three of them by and for it this year, including the guy that's going to be on the show this today.
Yep. That's Phil Collins. We'll get to him in just a couple of minutes. We do have a chance of having somebody breaking Joe Catta's youngest main event winner record, a guy by the name of Anton Makievsky, who was born in February of 1990. If he were to win this thing, he would beat Joe Catta's record based on when the thing started, not on when it would finish in November. There are seven players in their 20s at this final table. Then Martin Stasko from the Czech Republic, who is the chip leader, is 35. And the guy from Belize, Buddy Bunara, is 49 years old. And I think probably the most like an amateur in this group of very, very tough players. If you want to get down a bet on this, for the first time ever, the win in Las Vegas is taking bets on the November 9. And as you might expect, the chip leader is the favorite, and the short stack is the long shot in all of this. Our guest, Phil Collins, is right in the middle of the pack. But for the first time ever, they're putting money down. Remind me, if I don't ask him, you ask him, if Phil's going to put some money down on himself.
Yeah, there you go. You actually did have odds during 08, but they were not allowed to play the money on it, of course. and it was quite interesting to see the different odds. Kelly Kim's was astronomical because he was extremely, extremely short stacked.
Yep. You could have gone to the win at the beginning of the series and put down props on various things, including would a woman finish in the top 40. And, of course, if you bet yes, you would have made some money there, as we know from Erica Moutinho and a couple of others. By the way, Erica Moutinho and her boyfriend Doc Sands, who both had that incredible deep run and ended up at the feature table, now officially engaged, according to their Twitter accounts. All right, we've got to take a break. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think they can finally afford a honeymoon without any problems.
They won about $500,000 between them. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, one of this year's November 9, Phil Collins will join us here on the final table. It's brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis, where, by the way, Dennis, we have been playing Pot Limit Omaha every single day. It expanded from 2 days a week to 4 days a week, and now every day of the week. In fact, over the weekend, one night, we had three tables going here. It's been just great activity, and people are coming in and learning the game and taking a shot at it. We've got some online players coming out of the woodwork who are joining the crew of people who are playing, and we're very happy to have the game going here, along with all the no-limit action and tournament action and limit action. And there's also a 3-6 pot limit, limit high-low Omaha game that goes on here. That, in addition to all of the tournaments that go on, 13 of them in the course of every week. And if you want to find out the details on all that, go to harrahs.com/STL poker. That's harrahs.com/STL poker for more information on all of that. And before we go to the break, let's give away that seat to Vanessa Russo's Big Slick Boot Camp at the Gold Strike in Tunica on August 5th. If you want to win this, you've got to send a tweet to Dennis's Twitter account, which is @Dennis_Phillips. You just tweet the words Big Slick to @Dennis_Phillips. The first one to get through will be our guest at Vanessa's Art of Poker and Game Theory Clinic, her Big Slick Boot Camp at the Gold Strike in Tunica on August 5th. Also that day, she'll be doing a charity event for her charity that funds cancer research, partnered with the American Cancer Society. It's going to be a big deal on August 5th down at the Gold Strike. If you'd like to be a part of it, just send a tweet to @Dennis_Phillips with the words Big Slick. And we'll be back in a moment to announce the winner of that and introduce you to Phil Collins, one of this year's November 9, as the final table continues from Colorado and St. Louis here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts available on thechipleader.com and via iTunes. From Harrah's St. Louis, this is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I am Paul Harris, sitting in the Harrah's Poker Room while my partner Dennis Phillips is on vacation from Las Vegas in Colorado. And we're joined now by one of this year's November 9, Phil Collins, who will take another 100 days off before sitting back down at a poker table against eight other guys and vying for that $8.7 million first prize and championship of the 2011 World Series of Poker main event. Phil, welcome to our final table.
All right, thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. You've already been paid the ninth place money, the $782,000. I understand they gave you a check last Wednesday. What have you bought?
I actually just went and bought a new set of golf clubs. Is one of the first things I wanted. Got a whole new set. Ping irons and some TaylorMade wedges, or Titleist wedges and wood.
Okay, do you think making the November 9th going to help your golf game?
It might. I don't know. Maybe I can play at some nicer places now.
The side benefits of making the November 9th, I love it.
Phil, let's talk a little bit about what your plans are going to be for the next 100 days to prepare for the final table there at the Rio.
Uh-huh.
Are you planning on getting a coach? Are you going to help get somebody to help you with various aspects of your game? Are you going to try to sit down and review every minute of footage that was on ESPN? What are you going to do?
They're actually going to send us DVDs of all the coverage that was broadcast live the last couple weeks, and the show, whenever it comes back on Tuesday nights, they're going to send us that footage as well so that we can have it and review it. some of the other final tablists are in different countries, and they want to make sure everyone can get it. I'll sit down with some of my good poker friends, friends with Eric Lindgren, Jason Mercier, and then Brent Hanks is an online guy who's very good, and a couple other guys. We'll probably watch the footage together and try to come up with a good game plan for how I want to attack the table in November.
That's a heck of a stable to talk and discuss this with. That's excellent. Jason and Eric, wow. What else are you planning to do? Are you going to have, like, I prepared almost a game book with a section on each of the other eight players. And we actually went over to Europe and watched them for a while. Do you have anything special you're going to try to plan on doing?
Well, we decided that we wanted to take the next, like, week or so just kind of off and away from it. We're definitely going to pick up the pace, and we're going to definitely take each player very seriously and have a game plan for each one of them. We might actually put a packet together like you did. It might be a little bit too much work to write it all down. But, yeah, I plan on trying to keep track of how they're preparing as well, and if they show up anywhere in Europe or something like that, yeah, I'll definitely be keeping an eye on what they're doing and how they're playing.
Phil, go ahead, Dennis.
Go ahead, Paul. Well, one of the other things that we did is I actually got together with one of the local casinos and some of my friends, and we'd go around, and we actually played some sit-and-goes, and we played it different ways, and we videotaped it, including videotaping myself. And that was the first time I'd really watched myself play poker, and it was quite an eye-opening experience. It might be something you would consider, too. It's fairly easy to do, and it's quite interesting to watch yourself play poker with different hands.
I'm actually planning on doing the sit-and-go thing where they put the stacks out just like they're going to be at the final table, and you get people to play kind of as each character and with each stack, and play it out from there and, like, practice the final table that way. But what's so great about this year is that so much of the coverage has been on television. I was able to actually do what you said and go back and watch myself play poker, and it was fascinating seeing me make my decisions. And I think it's a great way to review your thought process, because you see everything that you're thinking, and you can really relive the moment. I really enjoyed going back and watching and kind of confirming some reads and checking out what I was doing in certain situations, seeing how comfortable I looked whenever I wasn't actually very comfortable, kind of thing.
Phil, how did you feel about the ESPN almost live coverage, you know, on a half-hour delay, where they were actually showing the whole cards on every hand that got past the flop?
It was a pretty cool experience. I thought this was a great year to make a run in the main event, because it would be so memorable if you get on TV and everybody, you know, really gets to see how you play. But in the moment, I didn't really feel that much pressure, and it didn't really feel that different. I was in the Rio all summer, and I was in the Amazon room almost every day, and you don't feel the cameras there. You can't hear anything. It seemed just like a normal poker game. So I actually felt very comfortable in the moment, surprisingly comfortable whenever I was on the feature table or the secondary feature table. But I could tell that a lot of players were very, very, very nervous, and they started playing differently because of it. I noticed that people hated to get bluffed on television. They did not want to fold, and they always assumed that everyone was trying to bully them. People were kind of giving it away. If they thought that they might have the best hand, they were terrified to fold.
Yeah, I think it's that extreme. I think it's another extreme, too. Some people hate to get caught bluffing on air. They don't want to look the fool. Oh, my God, this is going to be shown on ESPN. I can't make a move here, type stuff. And they get a little bit out of their element. And anything that takes a player out of his natural element and what he's comfortable doing helps the other people at the table and would help you.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I thought that I have prepared myself a long time to be playing big-time poker under the lights, if you will, like on a big-time stage. It just so happened that it was with live whole cards, but I was very ready for it, and I knew that a lot of players would be affected negatively, and I knew that if I just maintained my composure, I could play very well, and I thought a lot of players did not.
Were you worried at all, Phil, about having the information become available, even though it's on a half-hour delay basis? I mean, you're connected electronically. You've got supporters who are connected electronically who could be following it. You might have somebody at home who's watching it, who was texting information to you or to Lindgren or Mercier in the crowd or somebody else who could then tell you, remember that hand earlier? Here's what he had, or here's what I saw him do. First of all, did you take advantage of that? And secondly, were you worried about your information being absorbed by the other players?
I did have some people in the stands who would tell me in some of the significant pots what was going on or what people had. But I tried to just stay really in the moment because you're not making a decision immediately right after you get into it. It's on a little delay. But when we were at the, when we were 10-handed, I had Ben Lamb. That's upset. We had a pretty big pot against it, each other. And shortly after that, he said, so you had eights to me, and you had 10-jack. And it was kind of an interesting dynamic.
That's very interesting. All right, we're having a little bit of a problem with the cell signal from you, so I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk more with Phil Collins, who's one of this year's November 9. We'll reconnect with him and hopefully get a better connection. By the way, thanks to everybody who tweeted to get the Vanessa Russo Big Slick Boot Camp tickets. Mark Evan Thomas was the first one to get through with the phrase Big Slick to Dennis's Twitter account. So Mark is going to be going down on August 5th to the Gold Strike in Tunica and learning the art of poker and some game theory from Vanessa in person. If you would like to sign up to go to that and buy yourself a seat in Vanessa's boot camp or in her charity event, you can get more information on her website, which is bigslickbootcamp.com. Again, the date for that is April 5th, next week, down at the Gold Strike in Tunica. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with our guest Phil Collins, my partner, Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We're on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on iTunes and on thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Paul Harris at the feature table of Harris St. Louis Poker Room. My partner, Dennis Phillips, on vacation in Colorado. Our guest, Phil Collins, one of this year's November 9 for the main event of the 2011 World Series of Poker. Phil, I'm curious about your reaction to when the bubble boy went out, a guy by the name of John Hewitt, who crippled himself when he made a call against Bobby Bunara after Hewitt had opened for $1.1 million. The action folded around to Bunara, who was the tightest player at the table, who moved in for his stack of $9.3 million. And Hewitt almost snap-called there with king-queen. Turned out Bunara had, as advertised, the big hand, kings, and Hewitt lost 70% of his chips, and then after that, I think he only had about eight big blinds, so it was just a matter of time. As one of the guys who's vying to become a November Niner there, what's going through your mind as you're watching that?
Well, every time somebody went all in, whenever there were 10 left, I was just, the words, please call, were in my head, and whenever I saw Hewitt give away his stack with king-queen, I was pretty shocked. I played with Belize Bob for a couple of days leading up to it, and anyone who's played with him knows that he would have probably folded ace-queen there if he had looked at ace-queen. He was only going to go all in with a big hand. And I don't want to bash Hewitt, but I don't know if many worse plays have been made in the history of poker. With 10 left in the main event, we have in equity in front of us a few million dollars, somewhere in the range of 2 or 3 million in equity in front of us. And by calling off that bad in that bad of a spot, he burned essentially $1 million in equity. I don't know if many players have made more of a critical mistake. I was pretty shocked, but at the same time, like I said earlier, I knew that people get under the lights and they make just critical mistakes because they forget how to think and slow down. It was unbelievable.
In 08, when we got down to 10, Dean Hamill was involved in it. And I don't know if you played against Dean or not, but I think he's a very high-caliber player. He got crippled when he was called by Craig Marquis It was a raise by Craig, a shove by Dean, and then a call by Craig with an ace-queen offsuit. And again,
yeah,
the entire table just shook their heads and went, what? And he says, well, I have to call. No, you don't. Dean turned over queen-queen, and then he got a four-flush out of it. A heart came on the river to put four hearts out there. He had the queen of hearts and took the pot down and crippled Dean. But that was where bad play got rewarded. Similar to what you're saying with that king-queen. To call an all-in against that player right there with a king-queen, what hand did he put him on? Jacks, maybe?
Yeah, I think the Dean Hamrick hand as well was another example of someone that just completely forgets how to think, and they look at a good hand and they think that they can't fold. I've actually been in that moment as well where I was 10-handed in a 1500 World Series event 2 years ago, and I did not fold ace-jack in a spot where I knew I should have folded, and Seidel got me with ace-king. He re-raised me, and I knew he'd have to call my shove, but I went with ace-jack anyway, and it was just kind of a spot where I kind of forgot how to think because I was getting too nervous. Both of those plays are pretty surprising, and you're referring to, and then the Hewitt hand.
So, Phil, in that situation where you're on the November 9 bubble, you obviously don't want to make a mistake like that, but the converse of that is having the opportunity to exploit that bubble and try to chip up. Did you do that?
I actually did kind of an interesting strategy on the bubble. I was limping a fair amount, which is something that I do occasionally. For most of this tournament, I did hardly any limping. But I thought that the four stacks on my left, the four players, I thought Ben Lamb, Pius, Hines, Sam, and Anton all like to three-bet light. And they all knew that I would open a fair range of hands, and I anticipated getting three-bet by them a lot. So I wanted to abuse the bubble, but I did it in kind of a different way. I decided to just limp in and go post-flop as much as I could to make sure that I was able to stay in hands longer and keep applying pressure, but without giving them the weapon of being able to three-bet me. I decided to change it up early on the 10-handed bubble when I raised ace-10, I believe, and Pius Hines 3-bet me, and I thought that he was doing it without a good hand. My read was telling me that he was weak, and I knew that going all-in was probably a profitable play, but I just wasn't willing to 4-bet shove right on the bubble of the November 9 unless I was absolutely positive. And I didn't like that. I couldn't go with my read. And I thought that that pressure might continue, people re-raising me. So I changed it up, and I thought it did well for me. I was able to accumulate some chips and move up a little bit, but not without putting too much pressure on my stack, getting too shallow as well.
Actually, I love that strategy. You're playing a lot of pot size control there, enabling you to see the flops and such. People don't realize maybe if they're playing this that, you know, when you make a standard raise with pocket fives or an ace 10 or something that way, a hand that you want to play but can be easily, you know, dominated by somebody else, and they come and three bet you and you're out of position. That player's to your left. I mean, that's a huge problem many times. I think it was a wise move, and evidently it was. You've got, what, $24 million now going into this November 9?
Yeah. I know that there's still a lot of poker to be played, and you don't have to have all of the chips with nine left to win it. You can go into three-handed, by far the short stack, and then sneak right up and win it. So I just wanted to put myself in the best position each time and not get too far ahead of myself, abusing the bubble or trying to build a big stack. And I ended about what I wanted. 23.8, 24 million is a great spot for me, I think.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and our guest Phil Collins, who's one of this year's November 9. You two actually have something in common. You have both gone out of the main event with ace-king, which in Dennis's case, just so you know, Phil, in Dennis's case, led to us having a prop bet, which I think has kept us both from getting knocked out of tournaments. I don't play them as big as you guys do, but neither of us has gotten knocked out of a tournament by calling off our stack with Ace-King. As I understand, it happened to you not just once, but twice in the main event. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct. The past 2 years, I had busted out of the tournament once all-in pre-flop with Ace-King against Aces, and the other one I got tricky and creative, and I called, and then I re-raised all in after the flop with ace king high, and he had kings there. So this year I tried to maybe play smaller pots and not go broke with ace king. It was kind of a thing. I every time I look at it, I'm like, hey, let's not go broke with this hand. And I tried to just call, and I won quite a few big pots with ace king this tournament by flopping a king or flopping an ace, and having someone else dominated or just making a good hand that they were bluffing into. And that strategy, I think, carried me through a lot of the tournament. And I also, I just called with ace-king suited on the button when the chip leader raised. I thought he was kind of tight, and I didn't want him to fold a hand like ace-jack or ace-10 if I re-raised him. So I figured I'd see the flop, and I flopped a flush draw. I had a huge flop. And I still didn't re-rate.
Well, I think both the Dennis and Phil are poster boys for some great advice for anybody who thinks Ace King, Big Slick. You know, Vince Van Patten has made a big deal about Big Slick for all these years on the World Poker Tour telecasts. And Dennis, you two guys are living proof that you got to slow down with that hand. It's not the monster that people think it is.
Well, I mean, it's a premium hand. It's a hand you can do real well at. But it can't be deuces at the present time. So, you know, play it accordingly. And I think Phil brings up a very valid point. Playing pot control with that, especially if you're in position, if you're in a position like the button, is just awesome. You can really create some very, very nice pots by playing it right.
All right, we're reconnecting with Phil here, who's got bad cell service at his house. That's what I'm being told now. So we're going to reconnect with him. While we're waiting, let me mention that the World Series of Poker Circuit events for 2011 and 2012 have been announced, and our home casino of Harrah's St. Louis will be hosting one for the third year in a row. The date's now April 12th through 23rd of 2012. And that's 12 days in a row. And I understand they're doing something different this year for those 12 days, Dennis. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I did. I was actually talking with them. They're going to have 12 rings in 12 days. And the entire circuit, all 16 of them, are going to be identical. Each of them starting out on the Thursday, each of them, the main event starting out on the second Saturday, each of them having the three-day event there for the main event. The whole thing is going to be similar no matter whether you go to the East Coast, the West Coast, or police can visit us in St. Louis.
Yep, and by the way, the main event is also going to be a re-entry event for the first time. So there's all sorts of changes coming, and we'll talk more about that. The first event will be at a new location at the Horseshoe in Louisiana in September, and then they'll move on to Southern Indiana and Hammond, Indiana, and then Biloxi and Lake Tahoe and Atlantic City, and on and on and on. There will be 16 different locations this year on the World Series of Poker circuit, and we'll bring you coverage of that as we move along. All right, Phil Collins, our guest, the November Niner, is back on the line here. Phil, aside from this incredible deep run in the main event to get to the November 9, how was the rest of your series? You played almost every day, didn't you?
Yeah, I started playing with event 3 or 4, the $5,000 no limit, and I played almost every day leading up to the main event. Probably had 3 or 4 off days, and I didn't have a lot of success. I only cashed one small tournament, and I made a few day twos, but I ended up bubbling a lot of them. And even though I thought I was playing really well, I was building some good stacks early. Nothing was panning out for me all summer. Meanwhile, all my friends kept making final tables. Jason Mercier won a tournament. Alan Barry won a tournament, and a couple other friends were making final tables. I just told myself that maybe I was saving it for the main event, and I guess I was.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's about 6,800-plus people who would love to trade places with you right now, and I'm one of them. So well done. Very well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Got a question for
you.
The Wynn just came out with stats now, and that you can bet on the players that are at the November 9, including yourself.
Right.
With the odds on that. Are you going to put a bet down?
Of course. I'll definitely put a bet down on myself, but the money that I could win from the bet probably won't feel as sweet as the money I could win from the tournament.
Yeah, good point on that.
They've got you down at 6-1. You and the other two Americans, Phil Collins, Matt Gianetti, Ben Lamb, all 6-1. Owen O'D, who's the Irishman, who is slightly less than 3-1, and Martin Stasko, who's the Czech, who's from the Czech Republic, who is the chip leader, is in there at 3-1 with Sam Holden, the Brit, who is the short stack, the long shot at 14-1. Everybody seems fairly bunched up there in the middle, and it really is going to be anybody's game, because except for Martin up there with 40 and Sam at the bottom with 12 and even Makievsky with 13, you're all pretty much right there in the same area. How will that affect your play? And to go along with that, I noticed that in the seeding chart, you've got four guys with fewer chips than you to your left, which has got to be a good thing to know.
Yeah, I think there's some very, very good players that make this final table. There aren't that many soft spots, and the chips are pretty even, so it's definitely anyone's game. But I feel good about my seat. I feel great about it, actually. Of the two biggest stacks, one of them is on my immediate right, and then there are short stacks on my left. So whenever I'm raising a pot, I won't have someone who can be coming over the top that can bust me. At least not right at the start. That's going to make it a little difficult. Probably a couple of levels in, I anticipate they're going to be probably re-raising all in if I'm open raising. So I'll have to have a good game plan for them. I'll probably mix it up some and do some limping and some raising so that I could see some flops. But I do think I have a good seat with all the short stacks to my left. That could work out well. I could apply some pressure on them.
I want to be careful because I don't want to ask you your strategy or anything like that. I'm not going to ask you, you know, who you think is the strongest or the weakest at the table or anything that way. But is there anybody at the table whose game you think might change now that they've made the November 9? It's going to either give some coaching or try to play a little different, maybe that it tightened up really to make the November 9, but now might go back to a game he's more comfortable with. Anybody whose game you think will change a little bit now when they sit down in November?
I think Martin Stasko's game seems pretty raw. And I heard that on the final table bubble, he was just folding every hand. So he seems like a pretty tight player in general. But I think he's very, very intelligent. He strikes me as someone who just gets it. He probably got deep in this tournament off of a lot of really good instincts. And I could tell that once he accumulated some chips, he was willing to start applying some pressure. I saw him raising a queen five suited, and I saw him put in multiple four bets throughout this tournament. I just assume he probably had a pretty strong hand, but I think that he's definitely capable of mixing it up. And I anticipate between now and November, he'll really work on his game as well. And I think that he could actually come out and play really well and really aggressive with his big stack. I expect.
Phil, we were talking earlier about one of the more famous hands from that final table, and it's the one where Ben Lamb put in a big bet on the river when he was playing heads up against Matt Gianetti, and Gianetti tanked for 10 full minutes. I'm curious what was going through your mind at the time, since you're not directly involved in the hand, but obviously you're sitting there and observing everything that's going on. Did you try to put these guys on certain hands, and were you close when the cards were exposed, and were you thinking, I'm going to call the clock on this guy?
That was actually with two or three tables left, and I wasn't there.
Oh, you weren't?
I wasn't. Yeah, I was not at the table. But I heard about the hand, and I know what the guys had. I don't know if I've ever called the clock on someone ever playing live poker. It's in the main event, it's kind of a tough thing to do whenever you know that someone's going to be making a decision for hundreds of thousands of dollars in equity. And if everyone at that table didn't feel it necessary to call the clock, and it went 10 minutes. And whenever you're at the table, it does not feel like 10 minutes. You feel like he hasn't made his decision. I guess when you're watching it on television, it probably seems a little bit uncomfortable or unreasonable, but if none of them thought that he was taking too long, then I have no problem with it going 10 minutes.
You don't think it's necessary to put a clock on the whole game?
I don't like that idea really at all. I think that if anyone is taking an exorbitant amount of time, they'll get the clock called on them. I've been at tables where you have to call the clock on someone on a regular basis. Gianetti's not the type of player to think any longer than he'd absolutely have to. I don't think I've played with him and he normally acts pretty reasonably. The guy's taking a long time. It's probably because he's very tortured about the decision. And usually, if somebody really wants to take long on one, then I'd let him.
We had Eric Fidel on earlier, and he was down in Australia. They had a 45-second clock down there. It was automatic for all players. And he actually enjoyed it. He liked it. He said the vast majority of the time, there's no problem. You should be easily able to make it within the 45 seconds. That one or two times where you really have to make that tough decision, it does kind of put a little pressure on you. But he said it's easily handled. It moves the game along, and he was all for it. I've never played with a 45-second clock. I don't know. But I normally don't take that long to play anyhow. What bugs me is the guy that always takes 3 minutes to make a call, no matter what's going on. That's the guy that I want to speed up in some way.
Yeah, those are the worst types of players to play with. And I think that if I played in a 45-second shot clock format, I would do fine. I'm an internet player, and I'm used to making my decisions quickly. And I don't think I would ever... I think it would almost be to my advantage if there was. I would very rarely let the decision come down to the wire. I'd be prepared for it. But
right, Phil,
I guess I'm kind of a traditionalist. I'm not. I don't like the idea, I guess.
Phil, the last thing I want to ask you about is internet-related. Phil Galfond announced on Twitter today or yesterday that he has moved to Canada so that he can resume playing on PokerStars. Daniel Negreanu says he's in the process of getting a place in Toronto. Of course, he's a Canadian citizen, but he's going to get a place there to establish residency again so that he can play on Stars for the WCOUP in September. You obviously have already made a really big payday and are hoping for a much bigger payday come November 5th and 7th, but did it cross your mind as an online guy to leave the U.S.?
It really didn't, to be honest. I'm very happy in Las Vegas where I'm at. My wife and I are renting a house here. We have a bunch of friends, and I think it's a great city for us as a young couple. We go out to eat and have some nice meals, and there's some good entertainment here as well. And my wife has a job. She's a physical therapist here. So having to pick up and move is just something that I'm not that interested in doing. I love online poker, but I've done it so much for so long, it's kind of a nice break to get away from it. And I'm sure I do miss it, and I'm sure I'll be ready whenever it comes back. But and Vancouver is very nice. I've been there. I would love to live there. But I took the opportunity once Black Friday happened to kind of dedicate myself to live poker and getting better at that. I think that's where some of the biggest money is in these big tournaments. If you're one of the better players, you can make a lot in a very short amount of time. And I think that the practice that I put in helped in this main event, and hopefully I can keep having more success playing live poker. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm happy with where I'm at and what I'm doing.
Well, Phil, we really enjoy watching you on TV. We're looking forward to your taking that shot at the $8.7 million bracelet come November, and we appreciate you sharing some time with us here today. Now, for goodness sake, go take care of the dog.
I will do.
Hey, Phil,
I went
one other thing.
To get better reception. It's not even mine.
Yeah. One other quick thing. If there's some way or something that I can do to help you, obviously I've been there. Let me know. I'd be more than happy to. If you've got Eric and Jason in your corner already, I'm not for sure you need any help from me from poker. I've also seen your game, and you're a damn good player. But if there's something else concerning the November 9 I can help you out with, I'd be more than happy to.
All right, thanks a lot, Dennis. I'm very fortunate to have the friends I do. I probably wouldn't even have gotten there without them along the way.
Thank you. Phil Collins, one of the November 9 this year for the main event of the 2011 World Series of Poker. With Dennis Phillips on vacation in Colorado, I'm Paul Harris at the feature table of the Poker Room at Harris St. Louis. We're going to end the show so that I can start playing some PLO here, and we'll meet you next Tuesday at 3 here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and on demand anytime via iTunes or on thechipleader.com.